Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 18 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka, and the roof is on fire over at the Parliament Buildings, figuratively speaking. With Bill C-71, what a disaster. Very interesting to watch and a really good opportunity for all of us to pull together, to row together in the same direction and exercise our individual right to object when we're being victimized. So very interesting stuff going on there. Today on the podcast, I'm going to give you a quick update of what's going on with the CCFR, especially as it applies to Bill C-71. Also, I will have an interview with Bob Zimmer, who's a great friend to our community. And we're going to talk about C-71, a little bit, some behind the scenes stuff, and also what you can do as an individual gun owner to do your part in the fight against this ridiculous bill. And I will wind up the episode with another interview with Ryan Stacey. And he's going to talk a little bit about barrels. So hopefully we'll take it a little bit away from the politics for a little while, and we'll wrap it up with a quick message from me at the very end. Thanks for joining me, and we will be right back after this.
It's a fact that licensed gun owners do not represent a disproportionate risk to public safety. Yet whether it's backdoor gun registries, complex regulations, or unreasonable penalties for paperwork offenses, Canada's anti-gun bureaucrats will never stop trying to eliminate your will or ability to own and use firearms. Take action, take a stand, and join the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights by visiting us at www.firearmrights.ca.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Thanks for joining me again. And before I forget, make sure you share the podcast with people. Tell people to start listening to the podcast. It's a lot of fun. We have great guests on. We're talking to MPs. We're getting the behind the scenes information. We're talking to great experts like Ryan Stacey again in this episode. I love talking to him, man. That guy knows a lot of stuff. And we have a little bit of fun as well. Sometimes we even get these guys laughing, God forbid, hey, these experts. So anyway, make sure you share the podcast, get it around so people know what's going on in the firearm world as far as it's politics is concerned, and also that they're informed of what the CCFR is doing for them, because we've been working our butts off. We've really been accomplishing a lot of work, and I think it's helping, and I'll tell you why. So as you know, I've got a couple of interviews coming up, so stay tuned for those. But I want to talk briefly about Bill C-71 and how it's going. As I said in the opener, the roof is on fire. This is really interesting. So we had been speaking to some aspects of the Liberal Party, and the information that we got before Bill C-71 was actually released, the text of the bill and their campaign that accompanied it, we were told, oh, you guys aren't even going to, it's not going to be a big deal. You're not going to be too mad. It's just minor inconvenience stuff. You know, we've then fulfilled our promises to the, anti-gun community, and we haven't hurt you guys too bad. I think you're actually going to like the bill. It's all common sense stuff. And we're like, okay, great. That sounds good. And then of course it comes out and reality is completely different than the fantasy of the party people. Right. And it's 100% pure harassment. And 100% nothing that's going to deter criminals from acting like criminals. Criminals are always going to criminal, I guess, right? And so they're in shock. And not only was it a huge rejection from us, the firearms community, and you look at the petition, it's going to be one of the biggest petitions in the history of the electronic petition system for the Canadian government. I think it's sitting around 70,000 signatures. And I actually haven't even, we've promoted it, but I'm not out of tricks promoting this thing either, by the way. So I'd like to see it go up to 100,000, and that is going to speak volumes. That cannot be ignored. But the backlash is, I'd like to take credit for the backlash, or at least some part of it, but I don't think I can. People just, you don't even have to know the firearms file to hate this bill. And even people that aren't gun owners are hating on it. It's awesome. So if you watch the mainstream media, you'd never guess this, right? I did an interview with Huffington Post Canada. And because, I mean, you know, I'll talk to anybody. Obviously, we'll talk to anyone, you know, see if we can engage them in conversation. That's our mandate. And it wasn't actually the one of the best interviews I did. So I was like, you know, I wonder what they're going to use out of it. So I was floating around their website looking to see if they'd use any of it. This was about 6 days ago, 6 or 7 days ago that I did this interview, and they hadn't used any of it. So I was okay with that. But they had some other firearm related stories. And it's just amazing to me. And maybe I'm being naive about it, right? But it's just amazing to me. The mainstream media portrays a completely different picture of Canada than what is the reality. And the Huffington Post Canada had just done a recent story where they were repeating this lie that the Liberal Party had on a meme back in the days of Bill C-42, the Common Sense Firearms Licensing Act. And the meme was, oh yeah, if this bill passes, here's, and of course it's written conservative all over it, if it passes, then owners of restricted and prohibited firearms will be, you know, outside of shopping malls and are no longer required. They can carry these guns without a permit. And of course, nothing could be further from the truth. It's just factually, that's a lie, because you still have an ATT. It's just now a condition of a license. It still exists, and the police can still look it up if they stop you on the side of the road to make sure that you have one. It can be revoked if you behave badly, but not badly enough to have your guns taken. This is the truth. You can call the firearm center. HuffPost can call the firearm center. Anyway, they repeated this lie in the actual story. It was amazing to me. Now, let me tell you this. And these guys get mad when you call them fake news. And I'm going to tell you flat out, they're stinking fake news, right? Fake news goes on every day in the Canadian media. It's disgusting. It really is. It's just such a slap in the face to your intelligence. I know I'm going off a little bit, but maybe I'm like a childlike in some manner, because I'm still shocked when people lie in front of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of other people, and they think that that's okay behavior. But anyway, that's my, you know, cross to bear, I guess. But anyway, so I'm all, you know, I see this fake news as usual. And I had done, and this is how I'm going to link this in, I had done a podcast when I was in Ottawa that it was already outdated by the time I was supposed to upload it. And I think I mentioned this in the last podcast. And I had actually done a story in this section of the podcast about fake news, right? Or media dishonesty. And I played it was Peter Mansbridge accepting an award given to him by all the other people in his industry. This is the self-congratulating award show stuff that is perpetuated for so long. So ridiculous, right? Let's give ourselves awards and we're all going to clap for ourselves. It's insane. But anyway, and you know, his acceptance speech was 2 minutes of just like, the only thing matters in our business is truth. And, you know, and it's such a slap in the face being called fake news. And we're the only progenitors of truth in the country. And it's our duty. And we're the guardians of truth. And it's just a bunch of garbage, right? Just horrible. I don't know. It's whether these people are so deluded, they've lost a connection to reality, or they're just very malevolent people. I haven't figured that out yet. So anyway, all that to say, if you go on social media, and this is the exciting part, you go on social media and you look at the comments, even on HuffPost, I looked down the comments, 80% of the comments on their fictitious stories were pro-gun. And there were even people there that didn't even own guns. They're like, this is just ridiculous. This isn't going to stop crime. Anybody can see that. And it's starting to restore my faith in people being able to break free from being browbeaten constantly by the mainstream media into just thinking for themselves, going, does this make sense? Right? I don't need to tell people my car's in the driveway. I look out the window, I see it. You know, I don't need to be gaslighted, which is a term I use in that interview. That's why I thought I was a little harsh. But I said that the Liberal Party, based on this campaign, on this bill, they're gaslighting the public, and they are. If you guys don't know what gaslighting is, you can look up that term, and it's basically just telling people that what they're not seeing, what they're seeing isn't real, and that it's them, their own mind that's failing them. They're not seeing what they're seeing, and of course, this is what they've been doing to us for years. So anyway, and then if you look, the Liberal Party actually took out sponsored Facebook ads. And if you look at all the comments in the Facebook ads, they have like, there'll be 400 comments on, here's our new common sense gun thing. And there's 400 comments, and there's like 20 of them that are pro what they've come out with, or even anti-gun in general. At least the ones that I've seen have been like that. So I've just been really I'm really enthusiastic about the way that Canadians are starting to see past all this stuff. And I think what I'm trying to say is there's hope, guys. Let's keep up the pressure. So as you'll hear Bob say in the, you know, after the break in his interview, as you'll hear Bob say, make sure you call Goodale's office. Make sure you have a pen handy. If you haven't, if you can't, just Google it, because Bob will tell you the number. Call and leave a message for the Minister of Public Safety at his constituency office, not in Ottawa, not at Public Safety, his constituency office, and ask him to call you back because you have concerns. Really important to do, and we need them to get 1,000 phone calls a week. Call once a week. I can't stress that enough. So anyway, a couple other things I want to touch on real quick, and I'm going to talk fast so that you guys don't have to listen to this blabbering and get on to Zimmer and to Ryan Stacey. I have to thank you, all of you guys out there, for sharing the podcast. The podcast is doing huge. For sharing the videos, the political videos that we made. Those are the little shareable ones that are on Twitter and on Facebook and also on YouTube as well. That's been going really well. And thank you all for the support. The money and the donations have been coming into the CCFR. Obviously, we're not a big organization yet. It's not money we could never spend, that's for sure. But thank you for everyone that's been supporting us. This is really important. Nobody's giving us money but other gun owners. Nobody's putting in their time but volunteers. You know, and it's really important, and it's, yeah, we couldn't do it without you. So thank you for everybody stepping up and helping us continue to do stuff. There's going to be probably anywhere from another 20 to 50 of those videos that we did last week. They're going to continue all the way through the year, all the way through to the next election cycle. We're going to be holding everybody's feet to the fire, as well as a bunch of other things we have planned, which will reveal themselves fairly quickly. So keep the support coming. Really appreciate it. Really makes it feel like we're not here doing this by ourselves, and we certainly aren't anymore. So thank you for that. All right. I've got no really other updates to throw on you guys right now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to wrap this up. We're going to come back with Bob and then with Ryan Stacey, and I will just wind this thing right up at the very end and let you know a couple of more things before I let you guys go, okay? So thanks for joining us. Make sure you share this podcast. Bob Zimmer coming up right after this.
There are politicians and bureaucrats in Canada who believe honest, hardworking Canadians cannot be trusted with firearms. These people will stop at nothing to make sure they are the only ones who can possess them. Let them know you don't consent to their ongoing campaign against you. Stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, now and for generations to come. Donate or become a member of the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights by visiting us at www.firearmrights.ca.
Hey everybody, welcome back. On Skype, I have Bob Zimmer, one of our Canadian heroes as far as firearms are concerned. MP just got back from Ottawa 2 in the morning, so we'll give him give him some slack. But I appreciate you being with us today, Bob.
Yeah, no problem. Just got back from Prince George. I just drove through the night from Prince. We were doing a firearms roundtable there yesterday.
Right. I actually knew about that. How did that go?
It was good. It was my attempt actually just to talk to my constituents just about concerns around firearms. There's a lot of misinformation out there, and it was a bit of an educational spot just to say some of the basic what the classifications are, but also to have some feedback. And you know, I'm always willing to learn. And you know, if we have constituents that are concerned about different issues, I'd like to alleviate the fear as best I can. So it was a pretty good conversation.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Now I wanted to talk to you briefly, well, as briefly as we can. So it'll probably go for around 10 minutes or so as usual, or longer if we don't put a stop to it. But some of the aspects of Bill C-71, you know, as you probably remember, we had a round table when I was in Ottawa with, Tracy Wilson.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. I really appreciate you doing that. And speaking of which, it's kind of a story / analysis of this aspect of the bill. But when we were sitting there, we had just gotten the bill. I think it was the day after the bill was released.
Yes.
And I remember sitting there and you said, this is a long gun registry. And I was like, yeah, well, it sort of is. And you said, no, it is. And yeah. I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm willing to have another look at it. And it's, of course, you know, I just need a little bit more time. And then I realized, yeah, it's the entire infrastructure of the long gun registry built all over again. And and therefore, it is a long gun registry sitting there and waiting for one last piece, which is the firearm description itself to make it complete. So what have you learned about this aspect since then?
The old saying is, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And this thing walks and quacks. So I think the biggest thing in terms of the registry part of it is the reference number that's going to be required for transfer of non-restricted firearms that wasn't needed before. All you would need to do was to hold a PAL, and that was what was required, and show it to the other person. That's a requirement. And now there's going to be a reference number that's required. So you're going to have to call into a registrar, and you're going to have to ask for this particular reference number before that firearm is exchanged. So that sounds real simple, but in effect, what that does is just exactly what you said. It reestablishes the bureaucracy, because thousands of firearms are exchanged daily in Canada. So then who's going to monitor that? How is it going to be monitored? Is it going to be two people sitting at a phone in Miramichi, or is it going to be hundreds in Miramichi, as the former long gun registry was? And then the cost associated was at the end was upwards of $2 billion. And again, you know, we just think, and some can argue the basis of a firearms registry or not, but just the simple use of resources of $2 billion, if they're really wanting to crack down on gangs and guns, we had some comments at the roundtable yesterday. Just imagine what $200 million of policing on the streets would do to combat gangs and guns. I mean, $200 million alone, a tenth of what they're proposing with this new boondoggle. So we just think it's money ill-placed. But as you said, though, it's a straight-up registry, and that's the backdoor side of it. The front door is just handing, there's two copies that still exist that we've been told by the information commissioner. And what Minister Guido wants to do is hand those two hard drives over to the Quebec government. And that's the straight up walking out the door with the registry and handing it to Quebec, to the minister in Quebec. So there's no doubt it's a new registry.
Yeah. And most certainly it's a boondoggle. I mean, it's horrible. It cost $2 billion the first time, and it's going to cost $2 billion the second time. In fact, I was talking to somebody within the Liberal government. They said, well, you know, the standard of service is going to be way better than the old long gun registry. You know, there's going to be an online component and everything. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. So it's going to, maybe it's $3 billion, but you know, it's funny because they're talking about guns and gangs. And of course, you know, they're not doing the right thing. But you know what? If they wanted our support and our respect, and I would imagine they'd get your support and respect if they came out with a bill on how to break up the gangs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what the argument was. This is what this C-71, that's the whole rationale for it, is to combat gangs and guns. And some of the background checks, the part that I've even agreed with is even going further back than the 5 years. And I've had some from the firearms committee disagree with me. And I understand the concerns about mental issues and, you know, especially service members, men and women with PTSD, possibly being prevented from having firearms. You know, I guess what I just want to happen is I don't want to happen is a firearm getting into the hands of somebody again that can hurt somebody or themselves. And if this screening, the extra screening, prevents that from happening, I'm supportive of it. So, but that is just one small part that could be considered a positive of this whole bill, C-71. And it's there's not really not much there to redeem the bill, if that would be it, if any. But, you know, I think C-71 needs to be, you know, there's a lot of pressure. There's a petition now going. I think it's at over 70,000 yesterday, talking about repealing the bill. And we just need to give these guys a full court press, call Minister Goodale's office in Regina, and just tell them how you're disgusted by the new registry and all what C-71 proposes. And that's, I think, what we need to do next.
Yeah, the background check was kind of a sticking point for me, too, because, you know, people make mistakes when they're young. I mean, what if I have a youth record, you know, is that going to be a problem? And, you know, I just, you know, it's funny because, of course, everything you know, I don't want to turn into a partisan issue, but unfortunately they've made it partisan, you know, so they painted me into a corner, but they're apparently the party of second chances and hug a thug. And, you know, and they prove that in other bills, obviously we'll get into that in another interview. But at the same time, there's like, oh yeah, you know, if you threw a banana peel down for somebody to slip on when you're 18, you know, we want to know about it. And it's like, oh my God, man, you know?
Yeah, I know that's the thing. And I think without knowing clearly what that process is going to look like, just like former members of the military, just because somebody's been impacted by a former issue with mental health doesn't necessarily mean that they're disqualified from owning a firearm, or somebody's just had a marriage breakup. Does that immediately disqualify them for permanently disqualify them for firearms ownership? I would say no. But it's the unknown in it. And I think if they had laid out the process a little bit more for us to understand, we could be supportive of more. But right now, they're really telling anybody that's ever had a mental challenge or a particularly stressful time in their lives, they potentially could be excluded from owning firearms. And it has a lot of people concerned, and rightly so.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think it might have been you that had mentioned something, or I saw something written that there's no mechanism described for an appeal.
Right.
You know,
yeah, that's the other help. Yeah, that's the other part. Even just generally within the firearms legislation, there's very little that can be done once even a firearms reclassified. We were talking about that yesterday at the roundtable again. For recourse, because other than Supreme Court and other measures, you know, it's they're acting like you know, they're the last word in firearms in Canada, and it really shouldn't be that way.
No,
we should have a lot better expertise with the Firearms Advisory Council advising them with real experts on what should be classified a certain way, rather than a politically correct group of individuals. So it's I hear that too, and it's sad because it's really set up as a smokescreen to just hand over the decision-making powers to the RCMP. This is just window dressing that they're doing this. They don't really have any real experts there, I would suggest, from the firearms community. There was former ones there. Steve Chirino was one, and others. These guys have had lifetimes of history with firearms and just understand them well and can make good, rational decisions. But those people have been now excluded from that particular group, and now we have a political correct group. So unfortunately, that's the way this government wants to go. And you know, sometimes I like to, as my role of parliamentary or caucus co-chair, I like to do it as a more of a nonpartisan role. But they're really making it difficult for us to not you know, talk about this in more political ways, because there's one side that's on the side of farms owners, and the other side, it just appears they're completely against. And you know, it's hard not to say that because it's true.
And the other big well, there's a lot of concerns. Certainly when you have a firearms advisory committee where people don't even have a stinking PAL, not even 2 days of training, and when asked, they resist it. I had a discussion with a member of that that committee when I was in Ottawa, and that person was like, I'm not even sure. I guess I should get that paddle at some point. And you know, and then we had this discussion about, you know, the firearms issues, and he's like, I don't know anything about that stuff. It doesn't it doesn't affect any of my members of my group, so I have no idea. And I'm like, how did you even get on here?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Anyway, insane.
Yeah, I would, and I hear it's similar with different other levels of RCMP firearms in the firearms division too, and not necessarily experts even there. So, yeah, we'd certainly like to see it more rational conversation. It's drifted into the political correct sphere for too many years now. And you know, lawful firearms ownership is something that we can do safely in Canada. We all know that within the firearms community, and we just need to have that conversation more broadly with our communities. And you know, it's not something to be afraid of. We need to take certain measures to make sure it's continue to be a safe hobby and sport and lifestyle. But we need to have a rational conversation about how we can really do that, not just get into these political winds that it gets crazy at times.
Well, with the CCFR, we're a public relations organization. And, you know, we're trying to bring that conversation to the everyday Canadian, and it's not something that's been done before, and it's not easy work to create that conversation, but we've gone a long way to doing that. So I'm hoping that's going to bear some fruit at some point.
I think even just on social media, it's just telling, like, I've seen some of the videos you made, Rod, and those kind of videos, just hopefully they get around and they're watched by that person. Person I explained yesterday at the roundtables is that person, that mother of two kids at home. They might have some cautions about firearms. Maybe she's concerned about her kids and safety. But just to watch and really understand that Canada is a far different place than the U.S. and that we have really stringent laws here already, and we can make them even better. It's a bit of a mess the way some of them are made, and we can make that whole system better. But so they can be confident that their kids can go to school and be safe. And the more that that's done in that public sphere now, and as we call social media, the better. And just I hope that gets to be more of a broader conversation, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're doing the best that we can over here. And it's been, I mean, it's, you know, no good tragedy to waste. But this bill really spurred a lot of action from gun owners. The CCFR has been very well supported over the last couple of months. And we're hoping that we'll bring even a harder game to counteract this propaganda narrative that the liberals are engaged in. It's really shameless. I just want to share this with you because I just saw this a couple of minutes ago, and I got a call from Huffington Post Canada, right? And they wanted to do an interview, and I'm like, yeah, I'll talk to anybody, no problem. So I did this interview, and I thought, you know, that was a week ago. I wonder if there's anything up there. So I'm looking on HuffingtonPost.ca, and there's some story. It's called Liberals' Gun Control Bill to Repeal Measures Passed by the Previous Conservative Government. And it's hard to even read it without laughing because it's so bad. And it's got all of Justin Trudeau's tweets, rather incoherent, I might add. But where's this spot I'm looking for? It says, for instance, it would. So this is a new bill, right? For instance, it would roll back some of the automatic authorizations to transport restricted and prohibited firearms, such as handguns and assault weapons. Under the bill, the owners would need a permit to transport such guns, except when taking them to a shooting range or from home. And it goes into, it says, where the conservative government made it possible, basically, to drive around with these firearms without a permit. Yeah. And I've debunked that so many stinking times myself, and it's unbelievable. It is, they just keep repeating this.
Well, the one that I got a kick out of was that you'd be allowed to drive around, and I think they even put schools and some other malls,
shopping malls,
and some others. Yeah, and I think it doesn't. But this again, this is where it gets into crazy. You know, nobody's proposing that that's ever going to happen, but you know, I did. I guess. Roundtable too, we did in Prince George yesterday. We had the PG Citizen there, and then a couple of opinion pieces that were completely incorrect about that I was wanting to have easier access for a particular firearm in Canada, and they made the assumption that non-restricted was equal to unrestricted. Well, anybody that's you know, and this was my challenge. We wrote a response and challenged them that they needed to do better research and understand the terms within firearms law in Canada, because in the English language, they mean the same. In firearms law, they're completely different. And we're not asking for unrestricted firearms in Canada. I've never said that. And I'm not for making easier access to firearms. This is me as Bob Zimmer. Some might be asking the firearms community, but I'm not. But was accused of this, and you think, you know, at least get the facts straight, you know, and I think that's a bit of the difficulty with some sources is, you know, they're supposed to be news, but they're not really, they're opinion pieces. And I think we're challenged to respond to them. It's difficult at times when we see some negative things happen, like shooting in Florida, for instance. It's difficult to defend yourself when something like that happens. It's a pretty bad time. But, you know, we need to make sure that the record is straight, too, and people know the facts. And the deck is stacked against us a little bit. I just wish we'd have, you know, if somebody wants to interview us, come and interview us straight up and just put the facts on the table and let the people decide instead of always injecting opinion. So that's my wish, whether that happens. I think we have a job to do, though, and it's great groups like yours and your posts, Rod, that really help on the other side.
Well, they those three videos that I released, we're going to be releasing probably three of those every 2 weeks. We're going to make 50 of them this year. And those three videos were seen over 250,000 times because we sponsor them, right?
Good.
So we pay for advertising. So it's,
good.
It's getting there. It's funny because even when I read the story that I just talked to you about, I looked in the comments and it's about 80% pro-gun.
Yeah.
calling, you know, and you see it everywhere, right? Probably the only place you don't see it is CBC because they censor so badly, right?
Yeah, and again, the citizen, the same group too. Yeah, the people making comments underneath the article, 99% supportive of my position and clarifying and educating the writer and saying you were wrong in how you wrote your piece.
Yeah.
So, but it's sad that we just don't have. I guess that's wishful thinking. There's some fair media, and there's some even at the Citizen too that are fair and balanced, and I appreciate those. And you tend to gravitate towards those ones that want to be fair.
Yeah. Well, do the best we can with what we have.
Yes. You bet.
Okay. This went a little bit long, but I'm sure nobody's going to mind because I think it was a great discussion. If we want to push back and create pressure as individual citizens, how do we do that?
Yeah, the best way, Rod, and I have it posted on my Facebook, is contact Minister Goodale's office direct. And that's his office in Regina. And I would contact either his office by phone to just understand the way our constituency offices work. If you call the minister's office, he has thousands of staff members of public safety. But in our constituencies, we have very few staff. We might have one or two, or he might have four in Regina because he only has one office. So that makes a big impact when you call that office. And, you know, we had it once where 1,000 people were calling a day into our office. And it's huge. So that's all I would recommend is that we contact his office and let him know what we think, because we don't want this to go on. And he needs to understand that. We've seen him back down on other pieces of legislation, the UN markings. He backed down and had a pause for 18 months. But I'll just put the information out there for the people that have a pen. His office in Regina, Wiscana, the number is 360-585-2202. That's 360-585-2202. And his email, and this isn't his personal, I'm not going to give out his personal stuff. This is his office only. It's ralph.goodale@parl.gc.ca. And this is his email again, ralph.goodale@parl.gc.ca. And he's the Minister for Public Safety. And I would challenge you all to contact his office and just let him know what you think of C-71.
That's great. Yeah, we've encouraged people to do exactly the same thing. We came out with a web post as soon as I got back from Ottawa, and with what people can do, and that was part of it. And that's something I learned from that that roundtable. And once again, I really appreciate you taking part in that. It was really useful for me, and to bring that information and that experience back to our members too. So I really appreciate that.
Awesome.
Okay, I'm going to wind it up for this segment. Thank you very much for coming on, Bob, and we will talk to you again soon.
Good. Thanks, Rod, for the opportunity.
Thanks.
The media constantly makes a connection between licensed gun owners and criminal use of firearms. Whether it's intentional or not, the effect is the same. The average non-gun-owning Canadian agrees with our country's ineffective and prejudicial regulations. There is one organization in Canada that focuses on taking back public opinion, and that's the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights. Stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms. Donate now or become a member at www.firearmrights.ca.
All right, welcome back, everyone. I've got Ryan Stacey here again. How's it going, Ryan?
It's still going good.
Just like last time.
That's right.
Now, I thought we would chat a little bit about International Barrels, Inc.
Outstanding.
Yes, and you're a big part of that business. And what's the kind of stuff that you do there first before we kind of get into it?
Like me personally, like what is my job there?
Yeah.
Well, they hired me to make sure basically that, well, number one, to sort of set the direction that the company goes in as far as what we produce. So it's all me that decides what gets made first and what gets made later on down the road. I'm also in charge of figuring out all the twist rates and anything that relates to barrels, bore dimensions, land and groove styles, all that kind of stuff. That's all me. Plus, I have to sell the barrels. So that's kind of a big part of it. So I'm dealing with that at the moment. And all the advertising and everything else is also pretty much up to me. So pretty much everything except for actually making the barrels.
Well, that's okay.
And even then, I'm still helping the guys out in the shop whenever I get the chance.
Well, that keeps you busy though, right?
It does, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And I have no idea actually how a barrel is even made. And, you know, I can figure out that there's a piece of steel
yep.
and you drill a hole in it.
That's true.
But just, I know this is probably silly for some people. If you know all this stuff, just bear with me. This is me being selfish. How the hell do you stick rifling down the barrel?
Well, there's three methods. So the first method is a method we use. It's called button rifling. So basically you drill the hole, you make sure it's the perfect size that you want your bore diameter to be. And then you lubricate the inside of the barrel and you draw a button through the barrel. And the button has the rifling cut into the button. So as you drag that button through the steel in the bore, it imprints the rifling into the inside of the barrel. So that's button rifling. So you can do it two ways. You can pull the button through, which is what we do, or some companies will actually push a button through. I'm not a huge fan of the pushing method. I think the pulling method is better personally, but I'll leave that be. So that's button rifling. There's also cut rifling, which is another method in which you use a cutting tool inside the bore to actually scrape out or cut out a few 10/1000ths of an inch at a time in the twist rate that you're trying to achieve. So you basically, you're putting a cutter down the bore and it's cutting out a very minute amount of steel at a time. The cool thing about cut rifling is you can actually control, because all the cut riflers are all computer controlled, basically, you can control the twist rate of the lands and grooves, or the grooves, I guess. You can control them. So have you ever heard of a gain twist?
No.
Nope. So basically what it is some guys are going to a type of rifling called a gain twist. So say you're shooting a 308, you'll start at, say, a 1 in 16 twist, so one turn in 16 inches, and it gets progressively faster as it gets towards the muzzle. So by the time the bullet exits the muzzle, it's actually moving through rifling that's cut to, say, 1 in 9, a twist rate of 1 in 9. One spin in 9 inches. Mm-hmm. So the beauty of that is when you start out in a slow twist rate, there's less torque on the rifle at the very beginning. Some people think that the bullet jumps into slower twist rates a little bit easier than coming out of the case and going directly into a fast twist. So that's the cool thing about cut rifling is you can make those kinds of adjustments to the rifling. And the third type of rifling is hammer forging. We also have a hammer forge at the shop. It's not operational yet, but it's in the process of becoming operational. It's the same one they have at Colt Canada, actually. It's a GFM SKK6, I think is the model number. But anyways, basically what that does is you drill a hole through a blank, you put it into the cold hammer forge, and it pounds the steel around a mandrel, which is run through the center of the bore, and it advances along and it puts the rifling through the whole bore of the blank by squishing the steel basically onto this mandrel that has the rifling engraved into it, like a reverse image kind of thing. And so the cold hammer forge is pretty neat because it can produce a barrel every 3 minutes, which is pretty quick. And cold hammer forging does a couple of things. It makes the inside of the bore very shiny and smooth. because you're squeezing the steel around the mandrel, it comes out quite nice. But it also work hardens the inside of the bore and the outside of the steel, the outside diameter, because you're pounding it around the mandrel and the hammers are hitting the outside of the steel. You actually get quite a hard surface, so you can get a little bit more wear out of a cold hammer forged barrel than possibly some of the other ones. Now, of course, that's all up in the air, and it just depends on the person, what they prefer. I think if you look in the competition shooting world, I don't think there's a lot of people that are shooting cold hammer forged barrels, but there are definitely a lot of people that shoot cut rifled and button rifled barrels at the elite levels around the world. So those are the three methods. Hopefully I'll have all three at some point. Right now I have cold hammer forge and I have button rifling. But yeah, if I have my druthers, there'll be a cut rifling machine in there before
okay.
the next couple of years. Hopefully.
So would that be your favorite? Your
no, I don't think there's
method?
Really a favorite. My favorite is the one that shoots the best. Yeah. So
have you figured out which one that is yet?
Yeah. Well, I've had barrels in both cut rifled and button rifled, and they both shoot really, really well.
Okay.
So I think if you looked at, like, say, 100 of the top F-class shooters in the country and you asked them what was better, you'd probably get about 50% that say button rifled and another 50% say cut rifled. So it's up to them. It's kind of subjective, I suppose.
Okay, cool. And now the barrels that you get from your company, are they all custom barrels, or do you make barrels for manufacturers that assemble firearms? Or
yep, we can. We're in the process of making barrels for a big rifle company, precision rifle company, which shall remain nameless at this point. Mm-hmm. But they make very, very high-end weapon systems. And we do produce barrels for them, but we also produce barrels for the average guy. Everything from hunting rifles to AR-15s to target rifle barrels, competition guns, all kinds of stuff. AR-15 barrels. Did I say that already?
No, I don't think so.
No. Yeah, we make AR-15 barrels. So high-end ones, because I'm a service rifle shooter. Nothing gets out of my shop that doesn't shoot really well. So
if I'm building a custom AR-15, I want it to be a really accurate.
Driver. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can get cheaper barrels out there, definitely. Our AR-15 barrels sell for $399, but you can guarantee that it's going to outshoot 99% of the other AR-15 barrels on the market right now.
Awesome. Is that a high price for a barrel? I've never built my own gun before.
I think it's kind of average, to be honest with you. It comes pretty much drop in. All you got to do is add the gas block and install it. So I think $399 is a pretty decent price.
Okay.
I don't think it's the most expensive price out there, and I don't think it's the cheapest either. But I'm not trying to be the cheapest guy out there. I'm trying to be the most accurate.
Well, that's good. Be do what you do as best you can.
That's right.
So here's a thank you for that very technical answer.
Yeah. Probably wanted it. A 2-minute answer. Yeah, I gave you the 20-minute answer, but
that's great. That's great. I'm learning myself. So it's as I said, it was my selfish spot. But we were talking a little bit before we started this segment, and I don't want to make it too long, obviously. But I think we're going to do another segment another time about some of your experience as a movie armorer, which this should be some good stories there. But we were talking about some of the issues, you know, with barrels, and you're using plugs to create gas pressure to cycle guns with blanks and all the rest of that stuff.
Yeah.
And it got brought up checking the bore for obstructions by looking down the muzzle end. And, you know, it's as an instructor, like in the Canadian Firearm Safety course, I've run 4,000 people through that course.
Wow. Yeah.
And I've never used a cleaning rod ever. And then I've come across, actually, I had an argument with one of the master instructors. Hmm. So I won't mention this fella's name, but he's very, very well known in the shooting community. Hmm. And you know, he was like, no, I don't let my students look down there. I'm like, you absolutely have to look down the muzzle end, because if you want to keep your fingers, you know, if you want to increase your survivability as a firearm operator, you have to be used to doing that. You don't have to do it every single time.
Yeah.
But when you pull your guns out, you should check the bore for obstructions by actually looking down the bore. It's not the first thing you do when you want to check if a firearm's safe. Obviously, it's the last thing. But doing it that way is the most important way. And then when I mentioned that to you, you were agreed with me. So
absolutely. Well, for me in the film industry, looking for obstructions in the bore when you're firing blanks is absolutely imperative. And obstructions in the bore can be something that could possibly allow a cleaning rod to go through the bore without touching or getting stuck, but something that you would see when you visually inspect the barrel. So it could be anything. Could be a piece of brass, could be a chunk of dirt, could be anything. I mean, on some of the sets I was on, you know, they were firing guns and then a stunt guy would die and fall into the mud. And so you had to make sure that, you know, everything was absolutely 100% clear because he's lawn darting the rifle into the mud pretty much every time he does his stunt. So if you didn't visually inspect the bore, you'd just be asking for trouble. And running a cleaning rod down there just wouldn't cut it because, you know, sometimes your cleaning rod, you drop it in there and it could be dirt and it may just punch right through the dirt, no problem. But still at the same time, you know, there could be enough back pressure to cause some real serious problems.
And there have been accidents as a result of an obstruction in the bore.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, there's been times on set where I've called cut right in the middle of a shot because I've seen that the actor, whoever it was, the stunt guy, had some sort of an obstruction at the muzzle, inadvertent, and they don't appreciate it when you call cut and you're not the director. But at the same time, if that person was to bring the gun up and let one go, and you know, he could hurt himself or somebody else around the set for sure.
So things can become projectiles.
Yes.
And then of course you can also have a gas issue.
Yep.
Where the gun could blow up.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, if you're handing the gun to, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio or whoever, and you're not 100% sure that that gun is going to go bang in the proper way, and the thing blows up because you weren't paying attention enough to make sure there wasn't an obstruction of some type in the barrel, then you're going to be in a world of hurt. And personally, I think people that own their own firearms are just as important as actors and everybody else. So, you know, if my own guns, they get muzzle checked all the time, and I backlight the chamber with a flashlight just to make sure there's nothing in there. And I guess I became used to it in the film industry, looking down the muzzle. It was part of my job. Probably about every 15 minutes I was looking down something. So yeah, it's common for me.
Yeah, it's interesting because I get in these, I'm not going to call them arguments, right, but disagreements. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the thing that was told to me was muzzle direction is everything. And I was like, I agree with you. Muzzle direction is everything.
Yep.
But there's a lot of things that a cleaning rod can go past. And then what I say in the class is, you know, how many hunters do you see running around with a cleaning rod gangling out of their pocket through the bush?
That's just it. You have to stay in reality as well.
Yeah.
People don't have all that kind of stuff when they're out in the bush and you're out hunting, you trip over a log and you lawn dart your rifle into the dirt. You better be 100% certain that you don't have a pebble or something stuck in the barrel somewhere. Mm.
Yeah.
That is going to cause a massive problem when you pull the trigger, when you see that moose. So.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of these guys have boar snakes and stuff, but still, you know, a lot of times guys go out with nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of people forget the amount of pressure. And I say that actually in the class too, mm-hmm. because people don't, you know, they look at guns and they think what you see is what you get.
Yep.
But I have an AR-15 in the class, mm-hmm. which is very rare for the firearm safety course because guys want to spend the least amount of money for their guns as they possibly can.
Sure,
but
yeah.
I actually have an AR in there. And, you know, anybody that's seen an AR-15, they know how small they are and light they are. And I'm like, see this gun here? When you pull the trigger, that cartridge generates 62,000 pounds
yep.
of pressure.
Yep.
62 PSI.
Yeah.
And if the gases can't come out of the barrel... or through the gas system, you got a real problem because those gases are coming out no matter what.
They're going to come out somewhere.
Yeah. So it's very well worth your while to look down the muzzle. But anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up real quick.
Yep. Just be safe when you do it. Use common sense. Make sure the gun's unloaded. Check the chamber. Make sure nothing's in there. And, you know, if you feel better taking the slide off, if it's a handgun or whatever, then do it that way.
Yeah, make sure it's unloaded and the action's open. How about just that?
Yeah, don't be silly.
Anyways, exactly. If people want to find out a little bit more about your barrels that you're making mm-hmm. and where to buy them, how would they do that?
You can look us up at www.internationalbarrels.ca if you're in Canada, or .com if you're anywhere else. The website tells you what we carry, what we make, but I'm also open to stuff that we don't have on the website that people are interested in. So feel free to shoot me an email. You can get us through the support address, which is on the website. And if you have a question, I'm more than happy to answer it. I'm also the guy that answers all the phones and questions and emails and stuff too. So if you shoot me an email or call me, I'm most likely going to be the one answering the phone.
That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, Ryan.
You bet.
Perfect. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it.
So that's going to about do it for episode 18 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks everybody for joining me. Don't forget, share these podcasts. It's a great way to have people understand, the value of the CCFR, what we're doing, keeping up to date about all that stuff, and also the calls to action. You heard them several times in this episode. It's really important you guys make those phone calls. You can send letters, that helps too, but the phone calls are particularly concerning, right? Because of all the work that's required in getting all the information and trying to get a call back, or the stress that's involved in not getting back to 1,000 people a week. That's really important. And it's really important to hear your voice that you don't like this. The other thing I'd like to say too is get out on social media. This is really important. We need to keep that wave going. I mean, everywhere I'm looking on social media, I see our people. And then when I see our people, and I don't see our people, I see other people that I've never seen before, and they're advocating. And a lot of times they're saying, I don't even own a gun. This just doesn't make any sense. These are the arguments that we're winning. So don't get discouraged. I talked about this, I think, in the last podcast. If you're not converting whoever you're arguing with on social media, you're converting 10, 15, 20, 200 people that are watching that conversation, and they're seeing how civil you are. So I know I sound like a broken record saying this all the time, but that work that you're doing by yourself, you know, just sitting on the couch when you're not, you know, doing anything else, you just want to relax and kind of play around on the internet. I mean, that work is absolutely invaluable. You are actually making a difference in your own life by doing that. So please, guys, keep that up. It's going great. I look at these comments, even on, I'm wondering why they don't censor us. But anyway, I'm glad that they're not. But I look at these comments and I'm like, man, we are winning. We're winning the hearts and minds. So it can be done, and we are doing it. All right. So thank you very much to Bob Zimmer for coming on. Always great. Thanks to Ryan Stacey. The guy knows so much stuff. It's ridiculous. We'll be hearing more from Ryan. So thanks to Ryan for coming on again. And if you want to support the CCFR, please do. You can always shoot us a small donation, $20 here, $71 if you can afford it, or become a member or volunteer, right? And you know where to find us, firearmrights.ca. Thanks again. Make sure you share this this podcast, and we will see you in episode 19 soon enough. Take care, guys. We'll see you then.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.